The Diary of Faith. Fate plays no favorites. It could happen to you.
Book 84, page 946.
In the Diary of Fate.
Yes, here it is. The name, Albert Riker. Occupation, department foreman with a construction company. Once, Albert, you were a man of skill and intelligence. But that was before you were subjugated to the insidious will of Eugene Margot, a vicious man whose promises of easy riches through gambling engulfed first your judgment, then your confidence, and finally, even your sense of honesty. In a desperate but futile effort to recover your losses, you risked much more money. Money that was not your own. And now today, Albert, because of a little thing, because you forgot your car keys, your life will be destroyed. In a moment when I have written, I will read from the record of Albert Riker in The Diary of Fate. Record of Albert Riker, the stamp of doom is already fixed on the pages of his future. And for a brief moment, I, Fate, look ahead at a single awful incident.
What's the matter, Nancy?
Albert, why are you looking at me like that? Albert, I'm frightened.
Of your own sentimental husband in an old blue sport coat? With a silly checkered weave?
Albert, what are you going to do? Stay away from me!
In the life of Albert Riker, the decision to murder was made. Then I, Fate, again employed the small, seemingly insignificant things that determined the inevitable outcome. It is ever thus. A turn down the wrong street. A misaddressed envelope. A broken shoelace. Little things, yes. But these are the tools with which I, Fate, shape your destiny. Remember, Albert Riker, how it all started? It was evening. You were about to leave the office when your employer stopped you. Mr. Bradley's voice was firm and cold.
Oh, Albert, I'd like to talk to you a moment.
If it's about that Medela deal, sir,
I... No, Albert, it's something else. Something more personal.
Something personal? My work, Mr. Bradley?
Yes. Until quite recently, you've always been so thorough, meticulous, and honest. That's why I haven't called the police.
The police? What? What do you mean, Mr. Bradley?
The Clark account.
Clark? I don't understand.
I think you do, Albert. On the 11th of this month, Dana Clark deposited $9,000 with you. But it didn't show up on your books. Now, where is that money? Answer me, where is it?
I took it, Mr. Bradley.
Why, Albert, why?
What difference does it make? I said I took
it. You young fool, it makes all the difference in the world. Is it family trouble? Your wife's sickness? Don't you understand? If your reason is good enough, I might help you to not turn you over to the police.
Yes, Albert. The money you had lost gambling with Margot and his friends has belonged to Mr. Bradley. But as you faced him and brazenly lied about a family mortgage, which had prompted you to borrow from the firm, you thought bitterly of the $20,000 in negotiable securities your wife Nancy kept hidden at home. Mr. Bradley accepted your desperate promise to return the money within a week. And when you arrived home, the thought of the bonds Nancy owned had crowded everything else from your mind.
Nancy, for the love of heaven, listen to me. You've got to do as I say. You must give me those bonds.
I don't have to do anything of the kind. Now, look, Albert, we've been through all this before. I don't want to lose every penny I have because someone has a better poker hand than you do.
I said it was for an investment, a good investment.
And I say you're lying. Albert, I just can't trust you anymore. You're gambling. I never know where you are or who you're with.
Oh, good Lord. Must you also be the jealous wife?
Well, what do you expect?
Oh, Nancy, you're not making sense. Now, look. I've got to have those bonds. I'm in debt.
What about your late hours and those women?
Nancy, there are no other women.
You're lying. Oh, it's useless to talk to you. I'm going to bed. And don't bother trying to find the bonds, Elvis. I have a new place to hide things from my husband. Good night.
Oh, who the devil? Hello?
Riker, this is Mark.
Do you realize it's after midnight? I told you not to call me at home.
You told me. It looks and it don't step out of this. I'm still the teacher and it's still only 4 grand. I get impatient holding Mark.
I know it, Margo. Give me a little time. I'll work everything out.
Sure you will, Albert. Sure. I wanted to let you know I'll be at the Crater Hotel from tomorrow night on.
The Crater Hotel?
That's right. I'll expect to see you there. So long.
Goodbye, Margot. Well, Nancy, what are you doing out of bed?
Who are you talking to?
Oh, just the fellow I know. He was,
Don't you think I have ears? Go ahead, lie to me. Keep on lying.
What are you talking about? Have you lost your mind?
Not yet, I haven't. And believe me, until I do, you'll never see those bonds.
Oh, you see, Margo, I've only got 5 days left. 5 days to make up $9,000.
Correction, Riker, $13,000. You owe me 4 grand.
Well, that's just it. If I don't pay Bradley the money I took, I'll be sent to jail.
That's your problem.
That'll cost you $4,000. Wages are low in prison.
Easy, fella. Don't get clever with me. If I don't get my money, you may never get as far as prison. Now, don't forget that.
What do you mean?
Business is business, right? I'm not interested in weaklings who fold up and cry for favors when the going gets a little rough.
Well, don't worry. I'm not folding up. I'll get out of this hole, and I'll pay you, too.
Well, now you're talking. Just don't let it stop there with talking. I get kind of tired of that.
Yes, Albert. Eugene Margot was ruthless. Money was the only thing that could speak for you now. So you decided as a last resort to appeal again to the generosity of Mr. Bradley.
And what was it you wanted to see me about this morning, Albert?
Well, I wanted to thank you, Mr. Bradley, for this chance to clear myself.
And I don't think you'll ever slip again, Albert.
Oh, you can depend on that, Mr. Bradley. And just as soon as I've paid you the money, why, I'll feel like a new man.
And I'm glad you see it that way. By next week, we'll both be able to forget it ever happened.
Well, that's what I wanted to see you about, Mr. Bradley. Could you possibly stretch that time limit? A couple of months would make it a lot easier for me.
Now, I'll get out here at the corner.
Yes, sir. Well, about the money, Mr. Bradley.
I heard you, Albert. I've made it extremely easy for you already. So remember this. If I don't have that money in cash in 4 days, I'll have to call in the police. Do I make myself quite clear?
Brad Bradley's words swept through you like an icy wind. And for the first time, you were afraid. Trapped between the hard ruthlessness of the underworld and the equally unyielding impartiality of the law, you had no one to turn to now but Nancy, your wife. One way or another, you had to have those bonds.
Well, now that you've turned the house into a shambles, are you satisfied that I've got a good hiding place?
Sooner or later, Nancy, I'll find those bonds.
What good will that do you? If you try to cash them, I'll tell the police you stole them from me.
Why, you wouldn't dare.
Albert, let me go. My wrist, you're hurting me.
What do you think you're doing to me? It's not pleasant when a man's own wife won't stand behind him when he's in trouble.
You can save the teachers. Save them for your girlfriend. Or doesn't she have any bonds?
Oh, you blind fool, Nancy. I've told you 100 times there isn't anybody else.
Oh,
what's the use?
Albert, where are you going?
Out. Any place away from you.
You stormed out of the house and walked quickly to your car. Then, Albert, I, fate intervened, and a little thing happened. You forgot your car keys. You turned back toward the house, then stopped abruptly. The shades were drawn, and Nancy's silhouette stood out sharply in the light from the living room table lamp. Suddenly, you had the answer. The lamp was being tilted. Now you knew where the bonds were hidden, in the base of the table lamp. You turned and walked slowly down the street, your mind busy with the birth of evil thoughts. But Nancy, too, was upset. And later, as you neared a decision for murder, she entered the lobby of a downtown hotel she had heard you mention over the telephone. The Crater Hotel. Then another little thing happened. Because she stopped to buy cigarettes, she overheard a conversation a man was having at an open telephone booth nearby.
That's right. That's a check made out to me. Marcus. Eugene Marcus. Wait a minute. That's right, Pilot. Okay.
Pardon me. Are you Margot? Mr. Margot?
That's right, lady. Eugene Margot's the name. Don't believe we've ever met.
No, we haven't. I'm a friend of Albert Riker. Do you know him?
Yeah, I know Riker.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad. I'm very glad.
Yes, Albert. Because of a little thing, your wife had discovered that Margot was a man. And as that single fact relieved her mind of the gnawing suspicion that you were unfaithful, she resolved to help you. But you had given up all hope of any voluntary help from Nancy. And you could no longer afford to wait. You called Margot.
Listen, Margot, I may need you as an alibi soon. I'll have to be able to prove I was at your place.
That can be arranged for a price.
Well, I can pay $1,000.
Make it two and it's a deal.
All right. It's a deal. I'll let you know the details later.
Yes, Albert. Now you face the decision. Your freedom or Nancy's life. But there was no doubt in your mind. You had no love for your wife. And now it was too late to turn back. Soon, I will record another entry in the Diary of Fate. mortal faced with decision today can choose for evil and be certain of tomorrow. And even as you, Albert Riker, took the first step in your plan of murder, that of winning back Nancy's confidence, other forces were gathering against you.
Is that you, Albert?
Yes, Nancy. I got off early, all right.
Well, you know, since your wonderful phone call this afternoon, it seems as though time has just been standing still. What's that?
Oh, this? Some flowers. Violets. I remembered you liked them once, Nancy.
Oh, they're lovely, Albert. Oh, darling. How did we ever let things get so far out of hand?
Oh, it's been all my fault. Everything went wrong, and, well, I just took it out on you. Believe me, Nancy, I'm sorry, too. Very sorry.
Some thing goes to me, but let's not talk about what happened. Let's try to start over again.
That's exactly what I have in mind. Nancy, do you remember where we did start?
The lake, our honeymoon. Oh, Albert, wouldn't it be wonderful? Could we go there again, just the two of us?
We're going to, Nancy. I've already planned every detail. We're going day after tomorrow.
Oh, darling. Oh, wonderful. I remember it all so plainly. The cozy little cabin, the fireplace, and you and that sport coat I was so crazy about.
Not the blue one.
Yes, the blue one with the funny little check on it.
Oh.
Albert, will you wear it?
Oh, but Nancy,
please, Albert, please. Promise me.
Well, all right. I'll wear it.
Yes, Albert. Nancy's enthusiasm for the trip you had planned so carefully gave you confidence when you spoke to Mr. Bradley the next morning.
I wanted to tell you, Mr. Bradley, that I've worked things out and I'll have the money by tomorrow night.
But that's splendid, Albert.
I'll never let you down again, Mr. Bradley. You and my wife have complete faith in me. It's given me strength.
You told your wife?
No, thanks, darling. Albert, about that trouble we had with the bonds and...
Oh, what? Let's forget about that, Nancy.
There'll be plenty of time to talk.
That's right, and... Oh, speaking of the cabin, I forgot to tell you that I won't be able to come up until late tomorrow afternoon.
But, darling, I've been looking forward to it so much.
Well, look, you go up at noon as we planned, and I'll be there in time for dinner.
But, darling, why do you have to stay in town so late tomorrow?
Well, it's something at the office, Nancy.
All right. I'll be ready and waiting. So no stops on the way. Come right up to the office.
Don't worry, Nancy. I'll be there.
Yes, Albert, you would be there. You were impatient the next morning, and it was impossible for you to work as you thought ahead to the moment when your wife would be out of the way, and you would have the money you needed so desperately. Finally, it was time to leave the office. You were almost to the door when...
Albert, Mr. Winters is on the phone now, and he wants to see the specifications on their plant addition at once. They've got some sort of conference going on up at his office. I hope you don't mind going up there now.
Why, no, Mr. Bradley, not at all.
Good. It shouldn't take more than an hour or so. And I'll meet you at your place tonight about that other matter. Will 9 o'clock be all right?
Yes, Mr. Bradley. That'll be fine.
A little thing, Albert. Yes, I fate brought about an interruption in your timetable for murder. The conference with Mr. Winters took even longer than you had anticipated. And when you left his office, it was too late to return to your house and get the bond. you decided to drive directly to the cabin. For any moment now, Nancy might get worried and start making telephone calls. In less than an hour, you were close to the lake. Only minutes from murder. As you got out of the car and walked up the path, your eye caught the blue sport jacket draped over the banister of the cabin porch where Nancy had hung it, so you couldn't miss seeing it. You laughed bitterly as you thought of your promise to Nancy. And you quickly removed your coat and put on the blue sport jacket. Then you went in.
Good evening, Nancy.
Oh, hello, darling. I was just beginning to worry about you. Oh, Albert, the sport coat. How sweet. I knew you'd wear it. I was sure.
Oh, were you?
Of course. Now, Olivia, look at you. Oh, the memories it brings back. You know, it's just...
What's the matter, Nancy?
Albert, why are you looking at me like that? Albert, I'm frightened.
Of your own sentimental husband in an old blue sport coat with a silly checkered weave?
Robert, what are you going to do? Stay away from me!
Yes, Albert Riker, you killed your wife. For a moment, you stared transfixed at her blood on your jacket. The blue jacket that she had wanted you to wear. Then you moved quickly. You threw the blood-stained jacket over your wife, struck a match to a newspaper, and threw it into the center of the room. At the door, you stopped, picked up the kerosene lamp, and hurled it at the opposite wall where it smashed to bits. As you stepped from the cabin, you heard the awful engulfing sound of the flames as they reached the spattered kerosene. Yes, your scheme of murder was completed. Soon you would have the bond you needed so badly. Soon you would have nothing to fear from Bradley or Margot. And now, lest any who listen think that I, Fate, am unmindful of the inevitable balance of the scales of justice, I urge you to listen closely, for in a few moments, I will make the final entry under the name of Albert Riker in The Diary of Fate. As the passing of time is the unrelenting principle of justice. Yes, Albert Riker, even as you arrived at your house an hour after you had murdered your wife, the plan already set in motion by your decision for evil was quickly moving to its irrevocable conclusion. And not even I, Fate, could alter its inevitable course. For only seconds after you entered the living room, your doorbell rang. It was Mr. Bradley.
I'm sorry I'm a bit late, Albert, but I have a mountain of work at the office. If you don't mind, I'll take the money and leave at once.
Well, Mr. Bradley, the truth of the matter is that I haven't got it yet.
What? Listen, Riker. Don't ever mistake my generosity for stupidity.
Oh, it's not that, sir. You see, I've got it in bonds, negotiable ones. I just didn't get to the bank yesterday, and what with the winter's deal this afternoon, and then the...
All right, Albert, all right. I'll take the bonds. I can straighten everything out on Monday.
Well, that suits me, Mr. Bradley. I've got them right here in this lamp base. Sort of a family vault. Here we are. There's the barns in a second, and then I can go.
Well, what's wrong, Wright?
The barns. They're gone.
What? They're gone, I tell you. What's that?
That's his box. Why, it's a note.
Give it to me. It's from your wife. Let's see. Dear Albus, I hope you never find this letter, for if you do, it can only mean that you never intended to meet me at the lake. It can only mean that you intended to rob me. If that was your plan, Albert, I'm sorry, because I've already converted the bonds into cash, and I intended to give you the money. You see, I was wrong about Margot. I thought Margot was a woman. Yes, Albert, if you were really sincere about our starting all over again, the money is yours. I put it in the inside pocket of your blue sport jacket. The one...
What? The blue jacket. That's funny. All of it was in the blue jacket.
Where is it?
The jacket. But I burned it in the cabin. Don't you understand? I destroyed it. I threw it over Nancy and set it on fire.
And now it is time to close the book. Another entry has been duly noted. In the case of Albert Riker, as in the cases of all mortals, I, fate, am but the instrument of a plan. And the little things of life are the tools with which I work. I, fate, arranged for Albert Riker to forget his car keys. And as a result, he discovered where his wife had hidden the bond. And because of another little thing, because Nancy Riker remembered a blue jacket, Albert's evil scheme exploded. And in the hysteria of the moment, he admitted setting fire to the cabin, and the entire plan was revealed. And now, Eugene Margot sits in his prison cell, paying his debt to society. And as Albert Riker feels the straps of the electric chair snapped about his legs, he curses me, fate, for the little things that brought about his undoing. Now the plan is finished, complete, and justice has been served. Ponder well the moral, you who listen, and remember, there is a page for you in The Diary of Fate.
The cast included Herbert Litton, Gloria Blondell, Frank Albertson, Howard McNear, Ray Erlenborn, Bert Horswell, Ivan Ditmars, and Hal Sawyer. This is a Larry Finley transcription. Brought to you from Hollywood.